Welcome. I'm your host, Dino Cattaneo, and you're listening to Authentic Leadership for Everyday People, the podcast where we investigate the connection between effective leadership and authenticity. If you're looking for inspiration and tips on how to become a better leader by being your true self, you're in the right place. In our last episode, we talked about leadership and innovation with Steve Wunker, author of the book, The Innovative Leader, Entrepreneur, and founder and managing director of New Market Advisors, a boutique firm that specializes in innovation and bringing new products to market. The next two episodes will be focused on an important aspect of being a leader, especially a business leader. We're going to discuss if and how business leaders should think about their role and their company's role in influencing society. Today, as you can tell from the Speak Up and Dribble title, I am going to tackle the question of when and how leaders and companies should take a position on societal issues. It is a solo episode, a mix of review of other people's thoughts and some of my thoughts. The goal is not as much to give you the answer, but to give you instruments to find the answer that is right for you. Next week, we have a return guest, Deb Spar. Deb designed and oversees a brand new course at Harvard Business School that it's called The Social Purpose of the Firm. The class launched only 2 years ago, and it is required in the first year curriculum. She will talk about how it was designed and why it is a core component of shaping future business leaders. She will also talk about what it means to start or be part of a purpose-driven business and what people want to be going down that path should be thinking about. My hope is that these two episodes will provide you with a few sparks to think about how much and how you want these considerations to be part of your professional life. Enjoy the show. The topic of whether individuals or entities that have a public platform should get involved into politics and social issues is not a new one. Athletes, musicians, performers have all been subject to the question and sometimes been told, shut up and dribble. But what has changed and it has been new in the past few years is the fact that now the debate is involving corporations. Should corporations get involved into social issues? That's a question that has come to the forefront, and it has created a new thorny layer of complexity to the job of being a leader. So what I want to do today is share some thoughts that are a combination of insights from a number of articles on the topics, and then my own thoughts and opinion. And by the way, you will find all the links for the articles on the website page of the episode at al4ep.com. If you have listened to this podcast for a while, you will know my biases. I believe that as leaders, we have a responsibility to more than profit, and my views tend to skew on the liberal side. That said, that is my personal view, and now more than ever, it is important to respect different points of view. So my main goal today is not to convince you that as a leader, you should be speaking up on behalf of liberal causes. I mean, if you do it, all the more power to you and thank you. But my main goal is to provide you with something that is in between some starting thoughts and actually a framework to help you make the decision that aligns best with your personal values and ultimately the value of the organization that you lead or just a part of. So in the course of this conversation or of this opinion piece, if you will, there are three topics that I'm going to cover. First, we're going to start with a little historical grounding, some context of where the debate is right now. And then I will also talk about a couple of very well-known cases that have brought the debate to the forefront. Second, I'm going to share a wonderful framework for companies to decide when they should speak on a topic. There are actually 9 questions that I took from Alison Taylor, who is an NYU professor and author who is a leading expert in corporate ethics. And then finally, you may recall that when Roe versus Wade was overturned, my partners at Inspire ER, now known as Lead 3R, joined me in producing an episode to help leaders figure out how to deal with it. In that episode, Kurt Landon shared a 5-step process for leaders to follow to be effective when taking a stance. So as I was re-listening to the episode, it was clear that that process applies to any topic. And we will close the episode with a recap of that process and the steps that were taken in it. So let's start with some historical context. To begin with, the idea that business until recently has always been involved with business and not involved with politics and with advocacy is factually wrong. All major industries have lobbying arms who go and advocate on behalf of the industry's interests with politicians. They try to get legislative action. They do try to mobilize grassroots forces to support on their behalf. So business and politics and society have always been intertwined. The second concept that's important is as the view of the world, and especially in the United States, tends to the idea that the private sector is more efficient in managing even things for society, then one would argue that maybe business should be held accountable, not just for their profits, but also they should be measured on the impact that their work has on society. If you think about a situation where, left to their own devices, a business that was supposedly being more efficient for society created a damage. You only need to go back about 20 years to the Enron manipulation of the electricity market in California. So now that we have this terrain that business has always been involved in society and politics, what has changed? In the past 10 or 15 years, we've seen the rise of the impact of ESG, environmental, social, and governance. And we have seen the debate rise among the investors. There were a couple of key turning points in that sort of like flex points. In 2016, a study by MIT and the Boston Consulting Group revealed that 75% of investors believe that sustainability creates tangible value. And then in 2018, the landmark letter by Larry Fink, founder investment management firm BlackRock, said that, I'm going to read this, to prosper over time, every company must not only deliver financial performance, but also show how it makes a positive contribution to society. Companies must benefit all their stakeholders, including shareholders, employees, customers, and the communities in which they operate. And as this came out, also within the investing community, a point of view that ESG was not only good for society, but also good for profits started to rise. Bain, the consulting arm, has a company called EcoVadis who assesses ESG activities. And last year, they did a study that covers about 100,000 companies, more than 95% of which are private. And the research looked at how sustainability and ESG activities impact returns on investment and profitability. And so they had a couple of findings. One was that actually there's no negative impact from having ESG activities within the company and the returns. And then even though it's not stated, at least in the article that I read, as a definite causal effect, generally companies that have good ESG activities are associated with revenue growth, with good EBITDA margins, and then they also indicate that successful company have positive ESG outcomes, and that good sustainability measures correlate with better financial performance. So this push on the investor side on the idea of correlating good, if you will, societal behavior with good returns is something that's been an important part of the conversation for the last few years. The third and most important part, and what I want to talk about today, is the fact that with the rise of social media, citizen journalism, and a lot more attention put by consumers and employees on the behavior of companies, it has become impossible for companies not to be under scrutiny for their positions. In 2022, while talking to the Aspen Institute, Roger Bolton, who is the president of the Arthur Page Society, which is the most prestigious organization of chief communication officers, said it bluntly. He said there is no neutral stance. Companies in the past could afford to be silent, but right now, silence is not effective, especially if the conversation involves the brand. And we have seen the impact of not dealing properly with this type of situation for different brands. Sometimes the impact it's been on brands and sometimes it's been on individuals. And a blatant example of that is the case of Bob Chapek, who was at the time CEO of Disney in 2022, when Florida passed the Parental Rights in Education Act, or the Don't Say Gay bill. Initially, Bob Chapek tried to not take a public stance, which caused a massive internal backlash by his employees. And then once he decided to take a stand, he ended up embroiled in a very serious battle with the state of Florida. And while obviously there's no question that no matter what position he chose, he would have had a very difficult situation to face and some very dark consequences given the circumstances, the fact that he tried to take a neutral position or stay above the fray ultimately created a situation that cost him his job. The second example that I want to talk about, also very well known to everybody, is the controversy that Bud Light found itself involved with when, in April of last year, a very popular trans influencer, Dylan Mulvaney, posted about Bud Light on TikTok. That post caused a backlash against Bud Light, with famous conservative figures in the entertainment world calling for a boycott. And then Bud Light ended up backtracking, suspending the marketers that started the campaign. But at that point, the damage to the brand had been done. And I'm reporting now figures from both sources, from articles in 2024. Fox Business reports that Bud Light lost over 30% of sales compared to last year at the same point. And then there's an article on CNN that says that Bud Light may have lost as much as $1.4 billion in sales due to the Dylan Mulvaney controversy. So I don't know what the exact damage, but all sides agree that there's been a serious damage to the brand. The reason why I'm choosing these two cases is because both cases involved the same two major mistakes. The first mistake is not taking the time to understand who are the key relevant audiences and where they stand on a specific issue. In the case of Disney, this did not take into account the amount of support and the amount of LGBTQ plus employees that it had. And then in the case of Bud Light, the initiative was started without taking into account the fact that its core customers tend to be more conservatives and not supportive of this issue. The second major mistake that both Bob Chapek and Bud Light did is not coming into the situation with a plan and a close understanding of where they stood and how this would have impacted their audiences. They both ended up having to do an about face, which is ultimately what caused the most damage. And I'm pointing this out because in some cases, having a strong conviction in your position and sticking to it from the beginning, ultimately, if you think about just of the economic performance, is what matter. In a really interesting piece of research conducted by Yura Lokonite, Xinrong Xu, and Anna Tuckman in 2022, there are three marketing scientists who looked at the performance of Goya sales. And you may recall in the summer of 2020, the CEO of Goya Beans made some very inflammatory statements around immigration in support of President Trump. What happened in that case is there was a boycott Goya movement that started, but at the same time, there was a boycott movement that started in support of Goya. And what the research that these three marketing scientists and professors did showed that looking at all the sales scans by Nielsen, ultimately, in general, the controversy had no negative impact on the brand. What's interesting in that case is that when brands are worried about boycotts and the impact that taking a stance may have, what's important is actually to have conviction in the stance and to be able to rally support for the position. So I chose these three examples to make a few points. The first one is that just taking a blanket statement that the company is going to be neutral on all social issues, it's not something that's going to help you. As a leader, you need to take the time to think about which issues you're going to involve in, when you're going to speak out, and how you're going to speak out. The second part is that whereas it is definitely true that customers are a really important group of stakeholders, as evidenced by the Bud Light debacle, it's also true that a really, really important and even more crucial stakeholder as a leader are your employees. That is reflected in what happened with Disney. And it's also one of the key points that Roger Bolton made in his conversation with the Aspen Institute. And the key thing when it gets to your employees is the importance of communicating actively and proactively. And that importance raises with the more complex issues. There was a study that was conducted in late 2023 by the Grossman Group in collaboration with the Harris Poll. The study looked at how employees felt in terms of how their companies had communicated in regards to the Palestinian conflict. And I'm going to put a link to the study so you can read the results more in detail. But what I want to talk about are the key findings at a high level. So the first one is that there was a lot of silence on the conflict internally, and that most employees felt that the silence created more confusion. It also showed that the number of employees that felt affected by the conflicts in the Middle East was much higher than people expected. And then generally that more communication created confidence in leadership, it created alignment with the company culture and engagement, all key business driver. And then finally, that the managers who did the best were the one who communicated more directly. These are interesting findings because they come around a topic that has been incredibly polarizing, and the findings are more or less the same depending on which side of the issue you face. And they once again bring to the fore the need to having a proactive approach to talking to your employees. All these leads, not surprisingly, to values, to clearly delineate and articulate your values as an organization, as an individual who is leading that organization, and being transparent to the people that are around you, both within and outside of the organization. And being transparent and respectful, having values well articulated doesn't necessarily mean that people who may have a different stand on specific societal issues should not be included or allowed to have a voice. As a matter of fact, it is really important to create a culture where people feel comfortable having a voice. We will talk specifically about this in the final part of the episode when we're going to be talking about the five steps that Kurt Landon recommended. What I want to cover now before we go to that is the fact that we are going to be faced as leaders with decision as to whether or not we want to speak publicly on an issue, what kind of stand we want to take, and how to get engaged. You may recall at the start of this episode, I said I was going to share 9 questions by Alison Taylor. As background, Alison Taylor is a professor at NYU. She's an expert in corporate ethics. She just published a book called Higher Ground, How Business Can Do the Right Thing in a Turbulent World. And my 9 questions are actually taken from an article that she published also in February on the Harvard Business Review. And the article is called Corporate Advocacy in Time of Social Outrage. I will have a link to the article in my page on the website. This is the advice that she gives in the article. And I'm just going to read it through because it's fabulous. She says, ask yourself these 9 questions before you lend your company's voice to an issue. If you answer no to any of them, it is unwise to proceed. Question number 1, is the issue central to your business's value, code of conduct, or rather existing public commitments? Question number 2, is the issue an environmental or society priority according to a rigorous materiality assessment? 3, does the issue pertain to commitments you have made to your workforce, such as diversity and inclusion or human rights commitments? 4, has your company done all it can to ensure it isn't making the problem worse through its actions or business model? 5, does your company have relevant capacity and expertise to contribute to solutions for the issue? 6, is this a new issue that has approximate relation to the company's goals or operations? 7, is a clear way that your business can make a positive contribution in collaboration with others? 8, will acting on the issue support a positive operating environment for business in general? Would it support democratic participation, fair competition, equality of opportunity, and basic human rights? And then 9, can the company make a statement that's consistent with its values, prior actions, political spending, and environmental and societal priorities? I love this list because it's a very comprehensive list. It goes to 3 or 4 really key elements. The first one, you need to speak up if the issue relates to your values, to in some ways the essence of the company. The second is that it makes sure that the issue is a relevant issue that has significant impact. But at the same time, there's a whole set of questions that relate to your ability as a company to create impact. And then there are questions that relate to accountability, whether it relates to the promises that you've made, to behaviors that you've had, and then to the credibility that you have in taking the position for the issue. This is a great way to think about it. If we want to summarize the issues, is you want to make a decision. Is this an issue that is in line with my value as a company and then as a leader? Is this an issue that I have already been participating in or that the behavior that I have committed to my stakeholders, both my employees and my other stakeholders, require my participation to maintain the commitments that I have made? And then, is this an issue where I have the ability as a company to make relevant impact? All this set of questions really relate to the corporate side of it, to making a decision on a broad level as to whether as a company you should take a stand and how you should proceed as a company in relation to the issue. I want to close the episode with the framework that, as I said, Kurt Landon outlined in the interview we had a couple of years ago around Roe versus Wade, because it's a lot more related to your specific issues as a leader. Kurt outlined a 5-step process. The first one is a step of reflection, reflecting on your values specifically as an organization and then your values as a leader, because this will ground your need to make a decision or take action. The second step is having a deep understanding of the resources that are needed for the company and for the people involved with the company in order to actually, once you've made a decision, to show up, to behave accordingly to what you want to do. And this goes not only to the practical resources that the company may have, but to how the organization behaves, how the leadership team of the organization behaves. The third part is another reflection, and it is realizing that when you speak out, you need to speak as a leader. And so when you're talking to your organization, both internally and externally, you really need to take into consideration all the different points of views in your organization and account for the fact that there are people in your organization that will have a different point of view than yours, and making sure that these people do not think that their opinions is unvalued and they feel they have a safe space, which will go to the final point as well. The fourth point is making sure that you're always working for accurate information and making sure that as you talk about an issue, you're talking from a factual base and you're not becoming part of spreading misinformation, whatever the side of the misinformation may be. And then finally, as I said earlier, is making sure that you behave and show up in a way that is respectful of dialogue, in a way that actually creates dialogue, creates opportunity, and creates spaces where people feel safe voicing their opinion and feel safe voicing an opinion that may be diverse or diverging, or voicing an opinion that may be different from the opinion that is expressed by the company. Today, we talked about how to think about taking a position with a company and whether or not to take a position, some of the do's and don'ts. You may have noticed that nowhere in this episode I've talked about purpose, building a firm with a social purpose, what it takes to follow a path that's led by a purpose. And forgive my pun, that's been done on purpose. Because next week, we will have Deb Spar, who will talk about a course that's been designed for first-year students at Harvard Business School to think about what is the purpose of the firm in society. And we will also talk about in depth of what it means to choose a career that has purpose. What are the requirements for a business? What are the challenges that you face when you choose to start a business that has social purpose? And it will be a fascinating conversation. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, find a friend who may like it and tell them that they should listen to it. Also, you may have listened to every single episode so far, in which case I am really thankful. But most likely you haven't. So go back and find a few other episodes that are interesting to you and listen to them. If you really like the show, tell your friends and post about it on social media. Every little bit helps. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on your favorite listening platform so you don't miss any episode. If you listen on a platform that allows ratings and reviews like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Good Pods, please leave us a stellar rating and a review. 5 stars. Stay tuned, because after the credits, I will play a song by Susan Catania, one of Boston's best Americana singer-songwriters. For more information on the episode and all the links, go to the website al4ep.com, spelled with the number 4. You can email me at dino@al4ep.com. Make sure you follow the podcast on whatever social platform you're on. On Twitter and Instagram, the handle is @al4edp, spelled with the letter D. And on Facebook, you can look for Authentic Leadership for Everyday People. The episode was produced, recorded, and edited by me, Dino Cattaneo. The theme music was composed, produced, arranged, and recorded by Nicolas Cattaneo, who also played keyboards and drums, with Tony Salverino on guitar and Jesse Williams on bass. And now here's a song by Susan Cattaneo. It's called John Brown and it's from her album Haunted Heart.
Weight and gold. John.